I think it's going. Yes. Okay. Welcome everyone to the first Ashkelon Women's Rosh Chodesh Gathering. Welcome everyone to the first Ashkelon Women's Rosh Chodesh Gathering, and this is in memory of my mother, Virginia Reeves Tranbarger. As some of you, many of you know, my mom died a year ago on Rosh Hashanah, and I was in Texas and then came back and the war started, and so I never got to do anything in honor of my mother, and it's been bothering me for a year. So I was inspired on Rosh Hashanah this year, sitting on the beach, that this is the way to do this, okay? So if you want to read more about her, her picture and her obituary are there on the table. My mom would have loved this evening. She loved to write, and she loved to sing. And she taught me songs when I was a little girl. Many of you know I was born Christian, I converted, but you know, I learned songs when I was a little girl, healing. And my mom also loved being with her friends. So our guest speaker tonight is Rabbanit Ann Gordon. And Ann has spent many years learning and teaching Torah in women's institutions of learning in Jerusalem and in the U.S. She is currently the deputy ops, I think, opinion, right? Ops and blogs editor at the Times of Israel.
One of them.
Okay.
The what?
Ops and blogs, like opinions and blogs editor.
What's
your
name? Ann Gordon.
You work with Miriam Herschel?
I do.
She also co-hosts the daily podcast Talking Talmud on Doc Yomi, and she's a bi-weekly Chochmat Nashim podcast. She's a Sefaria word-by-word fellow and is currently writing a book on the sages' interpretations of the Book of Proverbs. Most recently, Anne contributed to and co-edited an anthology of prayers in English and Hebrew written by Jewish women in Israel after October 7th. Tonight she will speak to us about the project and read some selections from Az Nashir. We will sing again women's prayers for our time of need. Please welcome Rabbanit Ann Gordon.
Thank you so much for coming out. I'm going to sit and stand. I'm not sure how that's going to work exactly, but it'll be okay. I want to tell you a little bit about this book, and I want to explain why we put it together, what it is, and then share with you some of what it is. And I have books if you would like to acquire for yourselves as well. But this is not a night to sell books. This is a night to learn together. And I'm truly honored to be the first speaker at your, I hope, you know, one of many Rosh Chodeshim to come. And all the more so in memory of Alison's mother. Az Nashir. So the beginning of this book did not begin with me. Right? There are three co-editors, co-collaborators on this book. Shira Langen-Sheps, Rachel Sharansky-Danziger, and myself. Shira woke up after Pesach, or Shvi Shal Pesach, it was Yantif, and having thought about Miriam and Yitzhak Mitzrayim, she said she has what she calls a divine download, this idea that we should sing again, that we should write tfilot. She had been carrying on a practice of writing tchinot, tchinot meaning prayers from herself, not just the tfilot from the Sidur, all through the board. She said, we should get people to do it. I'm going to call Anne, I'm going to call Rachel as soon as Yom Tov is over, and we're going to put together this book. It'll be like, I don't know, 40 prayers or 100 pages. It'll be nice. It will be our responses to October 7th. Okay, so 100 and I don't know how many, 16 prayers later, 55 contributors, 30 pieces of artwork throughout the book. There's illustrations you can, let's find one. See, I mean, but there's 30 different ones of really talented artists. It's a completely different project than her initial divine download, except for the fact that what it accomplished was exactly what she had been hoping for. namely bringing us all together after this very, very difficult year. I don't need to tell you, you live at Ashkelon. I'm coming from Jerusalem, where we had it a little bit easier. Not necessarily individual families, but, you know, in terms of sirens, anyway. And we wanted to bring people together, to give voice, to give people the chance, to give voice to the experiences that they had that nobody was really talking about. And a lot of people told us that they felt like they had no words. So some of those people we pushed to find some words. We know they're teachers of Torah, they're articulate leaders. Find some words, give us some tefillah. And for other people we said, okay, we're going to give you the words. And you will find, if you look through the table of contents, I can tell you there's daily life, and there's things that happened during the war, and there's tefillot that I hope nobody here is eligible to say, because one is by a woman who lost her husband, and one is by a woman who lost her son. And there's a tefillah for the hostages, and there's a tefillah for just getting through the day. What happens when you check your phone in the morning and you're waiting to see what has been Hutar Lefarsim? So she says, this is what we need to do. And this is what we did. This is the book that we did. We put it together. We had a tremendous two different launches in Jerusalem in October. One in English, it was an Erev Shira, really. And one in Hebrew. Rachel Sharansky Danziger brought her famous father to speak about his experience in tefillah in the Gulag. And I'm here to share with you, I hope, some of these tefillot, because I find them meaningful. I find the words that other people wrote also work for me. Thank God I can't say any of those truly mournful prayers. But all of us need, and I'll give you an example, a prayer for focus. And In theory, I could have, I don't know, photocopied pages and handed them out. And there are those who would say that would be a lot easier to follow. I'm going to read slowly and I'm going to read clearly. The entire book is both in Hebrew and in English. Like this. The people who wrote in Hebrew, it says Hebrew, and then we translate it into English. And the people who wrote in English, it says English, and we translate it into Hebrew. And I can tell you, that's a big job. And then to get it aligned nicely on the page so that it doesn't spill over incorrectly was also a big job. But I can say that every step, and that involved a lot of people. I should give all the credit, right? Translators and grammarians and proofreaders and a lot of people, typesetter. And we did all that as the project grew and grew to become this large of a book, right? Yelp, we schlepped them up the stairs. It's a very heavy book. Because we think that it is for this time of need, that we are in a time of crisis. Even if you personally, as an individual, may not be in crisis, and all the more so if you are, it's been a very difficult, challenging year. The reason we have Israelis only, there are plenty of talented writers in the whole rest of the world who have need of prayer, but I think we've all undergone something different than they have. We have one tefillah that's also about the anti-Semitism in the world, which has also changed the way things have been. So, as Mashiach, we will sing again women's prayers for our time of need. I'll answer one other question, which is why women? Meaning, not that you've asked the question, but I'll answer it in advance. Women. So, any of you who are coming from an Orthodox background know that women's experience of prayer is different from that of men, like it or not. Meaning I was always, for the vast majority of my growing up years, a minyan goer. And still, I can tell you that sometimes that will change when you have children, sometimes that will change when you find the women's section locked. There's all kinds of situations that will affect the expectation of your presence in shul. And it is our supposition and experience, I think, that a lot of women were praying over the past year, let's say every second of the day, every minute of the day, every minute of every hour of every day of every week, right? Everybody's praying all the time, but not necessarily with the words for the moment. Now, I think the Siddur is a very powerful work of tefillah, and I found myself davening from the Siddur without difficulty. It's not that I didn't find myself in the Siddur. But I think the Siddur and its specificity also allows us to say, wait a second, there's something that we in our lives, and often women in their lives, where women became, for many people, the pillars of their household in a new way as men went off to fight. Saying different words, different needs, maybe they didn't have the words, but different yearning out, calling out to God than we'd experienced before. Tzchinas is a Yiddish word, really. It's from the Hebrew tzchinot, and it means like supplication, right, to reach out to God. Tzchinas have been around for hundreds of years in both the Sephardi and the Ashkenazi world. In terms of women writing, they used to be in Yiddish, right, for the Ashkenazi people, and Ladino or Arabic in the Arab lands, because women would daven what they needed to say. They would pray what they needed to say, and they wrote their own stuff, very often about fertility, about pregnancy, about labor, sometimes about mikveh night. This is a little bit more far-ranging than that. That's in here as well. You know what happens when you have to go to the mikveh, but your husband's in miluim, and what if he's not going to come home, and do you go, and what do you, right? So we have a tefillah for going to the mikveh, and a section there of what to say if your husband is absent, right? The person who wrote it thought that was what needed to be said. As I say, there are 55 contributors. The voices are very different. You'll hear that now as we go through a few of them. But they all come down to the fact that this is prayer. Prayer meaning reaching out to God. Prayer means also that we come at the end of prayer to hope. Because when you pray, you're basically fundamentally saying, I believe that something can change. This kind of prayer. Other prayers of praise are different, prayers of thanksgiving. But the kind of prayer that comes when you say, like, we need this world to be different than it is at this present moment. All of that is a statement of, please, we need you, God. And some of these prayers are voices of anguish, right? Like where the expectation of God hearing is not as great as it might have been before October 7th. There's, I think everybody knows, there's a lot of pain also for people of faith who say, how can this be? So we don't have answers. It's not a work of philosophy to that degree, but we have the prayers of what one says when you feel that, is God listening? And that was a common topic that came up in different ways throughout the prayers. So, as I say, a prayer for focus. This one was written in Hebrew originally, but I'm going to read it in English because this is an English group, English-speaking group. And it is by Rachel Sharansky Danziger. And I'm standing for this. My God, on the days in which I am tempted to gaze round with wary eyes and allow my heart to fill with fear, help me look at my loved ones and recall what is in my hands to control, to encourage, to support, to embrace, to listen, to sow small seeds of encouragement in beating hearts. That's all. This is what is in my hands to do. Help me to plant what I am meant to plant and leave all that remains in your hands. I think we can all relate to this idea of, you know, to some degree we have to relinquish what we cannot fix to God, leave it to, things have to work out, but in the meantime, let's make sure that we've got dinner on the table. Let's make sure that whatever it is that your daily needs might be. Rachel has young children, so that's part of where she's coming from. Another prayer. This is called a mother's prayer. It was written in English by Ya'el Shachar. She lives in Alfei Menashe. Ribono Shel Olam, today you seem too far away to speak to. Author of creation, seemingly as unreachable as the stars and galaxies. And so I come before you to offer you something of my own, something that perhaps you need. It's very strong, I'm going to interrupt to say. She writes from a tremendous place of strength and faith to come to talk to God, and you'll see, fundamentally rebuke him. May you see your world through my eyes. May something of my love for your children become yours. May you learn compassion from my pain, mercy from my longing. May my love for your world inspire you, to be swift to treat your creatures with mercy. May it be your will, my God, that you come to see your world through a mother's eyes. Ribono shel Olam, God of all and always, 1,000 years for you are like a moment that has passed. Billions of years of slow evolution, punctuated by the loss of entire worlds. Remember those lost creations? And we remember only a short span of years, weeks of Shabbatot, births and deaths, beloved faces. How could I bridge this gap? I ask you, my God, to look through my eyes and see the innocent eyes that stare back at me. This beloved face fresh to this world, these hands that will do what other hands have done, but also what no other hands have ever done before. Look, see with my human eyes, not the eyes of creation that consign whole worlds to oblivion. See instead with the eyes of a mother, for whom this face before her is all there is and all there ever will be. To you, my God, I give the gift of my love for your world. This prayer makes me cry every time because I find it to be just so powerful. And I think for me it works in that way of exactly what needs to be said. Like, what is going on here? You need to, God is God. God is infinite and omnipotent and all the omnis, right, that you can come up with. And we're not. And that's part of the human experience. And the human experience is where we're hurting. And that's where we need God's mercy. But maybe God could just like jump the gun, give us the mercy without us. You know, now you can pray for it. But I find it to be a powerful theological statement about what it means to relate to God and to realize that God is not human. But we want God to realize what it means for us to be human. We did put this, we have sections, right? It's divided into sections. That particular tefillah is in dialogue with the divine. There's a whole other section of what it means to be a mother during the war, and what does it mean to talk to your kid, to help your kids who are feeling anxiety, right? Like, that's a very different kind of practical kind of tefillah. This was much more, as I say, theological, and I don't think you have to be a mother to think that this request that God see the world with the eyes of a mother or the eyes of a parent, I think it applies to all of humanity without it being so specific to what it means to be maternal, per se. Okay. Did I lose my place? No. Okay. I have two more. One is called A Prayer for Our Daughters and Ourselves. And this is a little bit longer. You can see in the lines are a little bit longer, a little less, a little bit more narrative within the tefillah, as you'll hear. This is written by Shira Pasternak Be'eri. She lives in Jerusalem. She blogs for the Times of Israel. You may have read her stuff. Our God and God of our foremothers, bless us and our daughters to follow in the footsteps of the ordinary women who became extraordinary when they faced unimaginable circumstances on October 7th and during the ensuing war. I'm going to pause for just one moment to say, I don't know you, and I don't know what all of you did then or in the year since, but I'm going to trust that you'll find yourselves in these words that Shira wrote. Grant us the valor of Inval, the security coordinator, who led the quick response team of her kibbutz in combat, holding off the enemy for hours and saving her entire community. Bless us with the devotion of mothers like Shachar and Hadar, who heroically sacrificed their lives while ensuring the safety of their children. Bestow upon us the sensitivity of Tamar, who remained on the phone with two young children for 12 hours as they hid in a closet after the murder of their parents and the abduction of their sister, supporting them and bringing them to safety. Grant us the compassion and fortitude of Shari, who served in the rabbinate's reserves and identified the bodies of scores of women, preparing them for burial with love and respect, and later giving them voice by bearing witness to their mutilation and desecration. Give us the courage of Amit, who fought her captors like a lioness during her abduction and bravely recounted her experiences of sexual assault after her release from captivity, speaking for all the victims who could not speak for themselves. Bless us with the ingenuity and presence of mind of abducted nurse Neely, who tended to the elderly and wounded in captivity, improvising treatments, identifying the most necessary medications, obtaining them, and distributing them based on need. Instill in us the religious commitment of Private Agam, the surveillance spotter, the Tatzpitaniot, taken hostage from Nachal Oz, who was forced to cook and clean by her captors, but refused to light a fire on the Sabbath in violation of Jewish law. Bestow upon us the wisdom and grace of Rachel, who became our teacher after her son was stolen, instilling in us the, this is Rachel, I'm sorry, Rachel, who became our teacher after her son was stolen, instilling in us the mantra that hope is mandatory and inspiring us and the world with the teachings of the sages. Grant us the generosity of spirit of Iris, who found it in her heart to forgive the soldiers who mistakenly killed her abducted son when he was on the brink of freedom, despite the fact that his hands were raised in surrender. By loving them and absolving them of blame, she enabled the troops to continue their battles and their lives. May we have the forbearance and positivity of Meirav, who focuses on the light while fighting for the return of her daughter, speaking with moderation and remaining true to herself while connecting with those who are different. Confer upon us the tenacity of the heroic wives and partners of reservists who juggle family, careers, worry, and exhaustion, tending to the needs of their children, households, and returning husbands, and bless all those who support them. Lastly, fill us with the faith and conviction of the bereaved wives and mothers of the fallen, who inspire us with their powerful commitment to their lands and people, and may we never know anything resembling their pain. Our God and God of our foremothers, may we and our daughters draw inspiration from these women, who show us that our potential is far greater than we can imagine. May we carry their example with us as we push our own boundaries, transforming our sorrows into sources of strength, facing the future with hope and resilience, and dealing with our challenges with courage, compassion, and unwavering faith. She's kind of summed up the year. Mm-hmm. And there are so many women and men whose stories are not in that tefillah, but I think that there's a powerful need to recognize these people who became our heroes. The regular people, right? It's the song, right? The regular people who became our heroes every day of the past year. I'd like to say, I wish this were, you know, afterwards, like the past year, but it's ongoing, and I think that's part of why we still, what we said when we were putting the book together, what if the war ends, what if people don't need it anymore? We're like, that would be amazing. We will put it all in the trash, you know, the trash file on the computer, and that will be just fine. So, l'davoneinu harabim, to our great chagrin, we still need these tefillot. But I'd like to share lastly a tefillah that comes from the Siddur, really, and I know this because I wrote it. And it's called, in English, I called it a song of Thanksgiving. But I actually, mother tongue and all being Hebrew, I actually wrote this in Hebrew because I took it from the Siddur. So I'm going to read Hebrew and English for you. Mizmor l'toda, right? Meaning, any of you who pray every day, you say Mizmor l'toda almost every day of the year, not quite, but many. Not Shabbos, not Erev Pesach, because it's a grain offering on the altar in the Mizbeach in the temple, so we don't say it on Erev Pesach, it wouldn't work. Mizmor l'toda. Haril l'ashem kol ha'aretz. Raise a shout for God, all the earth. Al ha'tzalah she'etcholala b'shamayim. For the salvation in the skies. Haril l'tzva medinat Yisrael l'chel ha'avir l'chol tomchayhem. Raise a shout for the army of Israel, for the soldiers of the air and all who aided them. Ivdu et Hashem b'simcha. Bo lefanav birnana. Serve God with joy. Come before him with exclamations of rejoicing. Du'u ki Hashem hu ha'elokim. Know that Lord, that the Lord is God. Uvin laila haya uvin laila avad. And in one night that was, and in one night that was lost, ha'yom me'umat ha'iranim u'mem shaltam nehafchu. And in one, he overturned the threat from the nation of Iran and its rulers from grief and fear. היגון והאימה, או מקצת האומה השחור, in a little black humor, לנשימה עמוקה, to a deep breath, למשיכת כתפיים, to a shrug of the shoulders, לברכות הגומל, לברכות הגומל ומזמור לתודה, to the blessings upon salvation and a song of thanksgiving, וחזרה מהירה לשגרה. I don't know if you remember April 15th, April 14th, like everybody just went to work. הוא עשנו ולא אנחנו, עמו וצאן מרעיתו. He made us and we are his. His people, the flock he tends, בו שעריו בתודה וחצרותיו בתהילה, enter his gates with thanksgiving, his courtyards with praise, הודו לו ברכו שמו, give thanks to him and bless his name, כי טוב השם לעולם חסדו, for God is good and his kindness is eternal. And that was my original tefillah, after April 14th. And then, before we went to press, quite a bit before we went to press, I don't know, Israel assassinated some people in Iran, right? And I realized, like, a prayer of thanksgiving is not quite enough, even if it's called the prayer of thanksgiving, right? I think we all were stunned, overwhelmed with gratitude for the miracle that wasn't April 14th, but then we also had the promise of October 1st, which we didn't know yet what it would be, right? ולעולם יפנה עמו אליו, and his people will turn to him eternally. בעקבות כל היום, היום מאומה זו או אחרת, upon any and every threat from this nation or another, from grief and fear to prayer and faith, הוא יהפוך יגון ואימה לתפילה ואמונה, and with hope for a peace that lasts forever, plus a little black humor, ותקווה לשלום עולמי, עם קצת הומור שחור, כי עד דור ודור אמונתו. For his faithfulness lasts from generation to generation. And so, I can't say with that I close. There's plenty more tefillot in this book. But to me, especially as we still don't know what's happening with Iran, and still don't know what's happening with Hezbollah, and Hamas doesn't seem to be quite as done as we'd like them to be, I feel like that's the tefillah that's like deep, deep, deep in my heart, that God will protect us, door la door, that this is, we are his people, and this is the continued faith that we can express that even in the darkest of times, we have hope and prayer that things will change for the better, that God will protect us, that God will provide salvation. The last section of the book is indeed Geulah, but I don't think we're there yet. And I think that even along the way, there is much to connect to God with. In the process of all of the book, I don't know, brouhaha, we were interviewed on the Times of Israel podcast. I had an in, you know, on the weekly podcast, What Matters Now. And Amanda Borsheldan, who is also a friend, right, I work with her, she said to us, how is this different from witchcraft? And we loved the question, right? We didn't even get to talk about it enough on air. But like, how is prayer different from witchcraft? So Amanda is lovely. She's not Shomer Shabbat. And she said so. She, like, prayer is not like a familiar thing for her. And for me, I say, prayer is nothing like witchcraft because it's not about wish fulfillment in that way, right? That was her frame of reference. Like, put in the prayer and get out what you've asked for. And I feel like, well, that would be nice. I think we'd all like that. We have so much to pray for. There's a lot we would like, you know. I don't think that's how prayer works. I mean, I think we all know that's not how prayer works. But what does happen when you pray, whether you pray often or you pray infrequently, what happens is you develop that relationship with yourself and the divine. And at a time when everything seems bleak, the eternal nature of God provides hope, because he's there, if you believe he's there, right? Meaning, if you are a person of faith to begin with, then you can have the confidence, I think, that when you bring your tefillah to God, he hears it. Whether he answers you in the way you want, well, that would be witchcraft. That would be nice. But I think that it's a very powerful element of confidence for those who are able to pray, and have been able to pray for the past year. And until Amanda spoke to us about this, I didn't quite realize how bereft the people who can't pray, because they don't have that framework, they're left at a loss in a different kind of way. I still say, as Mashir, we're not done yet, right, that we will sing again. But I think along the way, there is just so much to say, so much to connect to God, so much to pour out our hearts, sing as much as we can to develop that relationship so that we, I think also, so that we merit the protection and redemption that we seek, that we hope will come speedily in our day.
Amen.
I'm happy to also answer any questions. I might have to put on glasses for that.
I have a question. I don't think it requires glasses, though.
I just like to see people, see the faces.
I was really touched on Tisha B'Av that there were all these new keynote that were written. And I'm just wondering if some of them will be incorporated into the liturgy, and is there a hope that some of these might one day actually become part of the liturgy?
So I'm going to answer your first question first. I think that I grew up with a kinah on Tisha B'Av, with a kinah for the Holocaust included at the very end. It was never printed in the books that we had. It was like a they handed out every year. Maybe you still had it shoved in the book from the previous year, you know. But it was grisly, meaning the words of it were as heartrending as anything from the Middle Ages, and that much worse because I know that history better. So it will not surprise me if future years distant from now will include one, two keynote from now. Right, we're not the only people who have been writing in response to the past year. I think, and I hope, and I pray that at some point, scholars will pay attention to what this book is. Both the fact that it was by women, largely for women, men can obviously use it, they might not want the one about the mikvah, but okay, whatever, right? Like, there's plenty of richness, I think, from the variety of voices. At some point, I said, you know, it's not even, right? There's no thematic. Afterwards, we can cull and find what thematic similarity there are. But nobody had a meeting and said, okay, we want you to include these details. Nothing like that. People really wrote from their own hearts. We worked with them to make sure that they were available for other people to say. Because if you wrote something too personally, too, like names, right, then that doesn't work for somebody else to come along. But that was really it. We gave guidance for people who felt that they needed help with the words, right? Because not everybody felt that they could express them. This is what I'm saying, the challenge of finding the words when it's been such an emotionally laden time to then distill that into words. Even people who were writing nonstop on their own still found it difficult to compose, you know, for other people, for the world to see. But I can tell you that in going through the book, and I've gone through the book for different reasons, right? I went through the book to check all the commas. I went through the book to check, you know, did we have the name of God the way we wanted to have the name of God? Because every individual writer has a different way of writing the name of God, right? Like, these kinds of things. I find that, you know, lo and behold, there's a theme of hands. People talking about, I read two tonight that talked about what's in my hands to do. And I don't have a drasha on that. But I think one day somebody might. Maybe I will, right? Meaning that I think that there's enough to study here because it's so many different perspectives reflecting on a time of such great turmoil. We're not there yet either. I think it's going to take peace of mind to get there. Yeah.
Interesting. So I had a question, a couple.
Sure.
So I'm not a Hasida, but I do admire the Hasidim, and they have this was such a torturous time, and it still is, and yet on videos and even their theme song is Ivdu Hashem B'Simcha. So how do you actually get there when you're so grieved?
So I'm going to answer this, I think, with a personal story, if I may. I grew up in Boston. And whenever I was in Boston, I would daven in the shtiebel, really, of the Tolna Rebbe, Rav Yitzchak Tversky Zatzal, Rabbi Professor Isidore Tversky. He was a professor at Harvard, and he was a Hasidic Rebbe. And for those who think never the twain shall meet, they really, truly met in this.
Yes,
Harden Street. but very the shul is on Quarry Road, and he would get there from Brooklyn. So he died in 1997 at the age of 67, I think. And at the time, I think I thought that was quite old, but not old enough. And now, not old at all. And he died Motzei Yom Kippur. And I was davening the shul that year. And then I went to my parents, and I hung out there. And it was going to be Sukkot, and I was off because I was working in Jewish stuff, and so I was off. And I went back to the Talner Shtibel for Simchas Torah, which was a very special time there. They didn't do Hakafot Shniot b'Chassidim, right? They don't do it the next night, but they do it the first night. The night of Shmini Atzeret, they also have Hakafot. If I could explain to you the pain, like, the loss was so fresh and so raw, and it's a small shul, so everybody was truly in the throes of grief. And they went around their, yeshiva stomp shuffle and going around in hakafot. And then everyone kind of like went through the motions. But by the next night, by Simchas Torah night, somehow the simcha was there. And I think it kicked in because it was about the Torah. Because it was about everything that everybody in that community had gained from this Rebbe who was no more. And therefore, find the joy in what it means to be alive, to have been the recipient of his teaching, to appreciate that the Torah is eternal. And I don't think it was fun. Like, in other years, people did pranks and, all the the craziness of that Simchas Torah can be. It wasn't like that. But there was something in the singing that shifted from this, like, painful anguish cry to a song of joy. And so I say, to give you a personal story, because I don't have a how-to, but I think that when you do go through the motions, it can kick in for you. I think that the chassidim that who are dancing, the Yitzhak Hashem B'Simcha, I don't know if the first time they go through it, it's so easy. But they get there, because nobody ever said that the joy that is in life is negated by the pain that is in life. It's not that there's no pain, it's that there's always underlying it, joy. It's hard for the individual, but I think it's easier for the community at large.
All of Israel experiences it every year when you make that 6-second switch from Yom HaZikaron to Yom HaZikaron.
And you could lose your mind. but we do it.
People that has helped us.
Exactly. And I think that what we discovered in people writing these tefillot, some of them from really, really difficult circumstances, is that resilience. Like, we're nothing if not resilient. Yes?
I have 3 children that live in Sfeilot, and last year, I wasn't there the first time in 20 years.
Wow.
Because we went to see our grandson in Jerusalem, to go to the tour. And this year, I said, I have to be there to finish a cycle because my children had such miracles that happened to them and my grandchildren, great-grandchildren. And when I was in the shul, I was wondering, what's it going to be like? But you hear the davening, and then you see the entire community. And it was so inspiring to see the same people who had lost family, who had lost their best friends. They had seen such horrendous things, but they were able to be there, and they were happy. And it was the joy of the Torah, and it was dancing with the Torah. And Lali Dairy was there. And she gave a shiur to the women, and she said that it was so, it was so important for her to see and to be with the people in Sderot, because her son had died in Gaza protecting these people, and he knew how important it was for him to go and to be in the army. And I said to my husband, You know, I don't daven all the time. I said, but tomorrow morning, wake me up at 6:15 because she's going to get up at 6:29. And I want God to hear my prayer when he hears her prayer. She said that she believed that she has the right to yell and scream to God and tell him it's up.
Yep.
And I heard her saying this and quoting very big rabbis and thinking, wow. And then my husband, when he woke me up, he said, okay, are you going outside to scream? I said, but I am going to thank God for all the miracles, because I have so much gratitude for everything that our children, as horrible as it was, but they've been able to come back home. And because they were able to come back home and they've given their children the strength and they've worked on building their resilience, and they had maybe much of it beforehand, but they were dancing and they were singing, and I said, what else do I want? This is it. I don't need anything else now. This is enough. But it was, and I davened. Now I say to him every night, because I got one of these WhatsApp groups that's
Sure.
And it's all right there. It makes it easy.
And I got to that.
And I said, okay, I'm going to do it at night. And you know, I can sleep much better.
That's beautiful.
And I share it, not because I'm giving myself a pat on the back because I'm saying villain, but because it's something when you're mindful of what you're doing, and then you sort of notice what's happening inside, then it's easier just to go to sleep. And I don't even hear half of the planes going. I used to be able to tell my husband in the morning, we're bombing Lebanon. He says, what are you talking about? I said, Mark, look at the news, please. And every single time, I was right. Because it goes straight over my head. But that is, this is where we are. And I'm like looking to find another way just to attach to that. Because that's, I feel that that's what we have. Is that, that's it, that's what we have. And I work with a lot of women who work in trauma, and I'm one of the only religious ones in the group that I work with. And I say, how can you be in such a good mood? Now, why aren't you seeing all this bad? Because I don't want to see the bad. I believe that God is going to give us the good.
Amen. Yes.
I just wanted to say, I so appreciate it. I think you stated something that's very obvious that I've never realized, which is that the tefillahs were written by men at a time that basically it was only the men that really davened, because let's face it, you couldn't just walk down to your local bookstore and pick up a sitter.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And to have a woman's voice is just so different.
So I'll tell you, there's behind the secrets of the book. We deliberated, specifically in the Hebrew and English, it's not relevant, right? When do we put the verbs in the feminine, and when do we leave them in the masculine? And there were times when we said, no, obviously it's a female person speaking, it's a female voice, right? But there were times that people quoted from Sukkim, from the biblical text, and we said, you know what, we're going to leave the verses. If it was David HaMelech, King David wrote the Psalms, we're going to put that in his masculine voice. And we left those, like, Hashem Sfatai Tiftach Lufi Agitu Atacha, right? There's some convention we discovered that you could, like, write it with two yods instead of one yod, whatever, it doesn't matter. And we said, no, we're going to stick with the original, because the original is the original. We're not distant. We're not reinventing the wheel. We're not trying to give a new sidur. We call it a Sidur companion, right? Like the idea is that this should supplement. You know, now, I think there are times that people pray from this, from our book and not from the Sidur, and that's fine too. But our goal wasn't to supplant what's already in existence. We're trying to build on it. And yes, bring the women's voices into it, 100%. Yes?
Yeah, I was just going to say,
Yes.
First of all, I want to say thank you. And it was just so powerful, the readings, and I appreciated, I connected with so many of the voices that I wish I had the ability to create and write like that. I'm curious to hear more of the backstories and some of the things that you discussed or some of the reactions that you received in all of
this. I'm happy to answer. I might need a more specific question.
Like so you said, like we discussed the verbs or some of the different issues that came up as you were collecting and editing, or some of the responses that you might be concerned about, or
I'm curious
to hear the environment in which you
had
to.
Rachel and Shira and I have been friends for a long time, and we've been writing friends for a long time as well. So it wasn't strange that Shira, when she had this divine download, it's not strange that she would come to us. But then, as we talked it through, we discovered all kinds of things that we probably could have the same conversations again and have more different outcomes of the discussions, like what do we mean when we say prayer? You know, we've talked here a snapshot of it, but this has been, it was very quick from the end of from after Pesach until before Rosh Hashanah. It was a very quick time to put out a book like this. It was a lot of hours. There are more hours in the day, I think, than usual. But we discussed a lot about what do we mean when we come to pray? What is it that we're looking for in making sure that we have topics covered, for example? We discussed, do we approach someone from the hostage families? And we thought about it, and we made very feeble efforts to do so. Mostly we wanted to leave them alone, because we felt that it was too, I don't know, invasive. If they'd come to us, if we knew one of them closely, then that would have been something different, but we didn't. A lot of this became who were our networks and who do we reach out to, because as we did that, we thought, well, maybe we'll have to like just put a public kol kore, like a, I don't know what that's called, a call for prayers. And we discovered that we didn't need to, because the response was so voluminous that we had to, at some point, like we had to say, like, okay, we're going to cut it to Israelis, we're going to cut it to now. If you've sent in this your tefillah after this point, at whatever point we were at, like we just can't anymore, because it was already like the end of August and we were rushing to get it into print. So some of that discussion of what is prayer was, I don't think I have the substance of our discussions about it, but that question of what do you take as a given, that was also part of it, right? What do you take as a given that, what did October 7th destroy for you? It destroyed a lot for a lot of people. But in the faith realm, like as opposed to the on the ground, maybe on the ground it's obvious what was destroyed. But for a lot of people, the faith, so for example, if you have come to think that history is a series of events working towards a redemption that is, you know, following the creation of the state of Israel and the aftermath of the Holocaust, and here we are doing better and better and better, let's hope, right, Aliyah and so on, then October 7th kind of kicks that in the face. Because didn't we think that this couldn't happen ever again? I will tell you, I didn't ever think it would happen, but I never thought that it couldn't happen again, because I'm a student of Jewish history and I'm cynical, and I didn't think that we were in that messianic spiral. But if you did think you were in that messianic spiral, then what you're doing with your faith is a whole different story. And that came up a fair bit in the discussions over how people were going to respond. We talked about the concern of being labeled anti, which happens a lot when women, forgive me, when women in Orthodoxy, and I love Orthodoxy, and I love Torah, and I teach, and I've been teaching for now decades, right? But it still happens that there's this, like, suspicion of motives, which is, I think, totally illegitimate, but that doesn't mean it's not there. So we talked about that. What are we gonna, how can we cut that off before it starts? And somebody said, this is not a frum book. No, it's a frum book, whatever that might mean, right? Like, it's people of faith writing tefillot in a tradition that goes back hundreds of years that you, man, caught accusing us, who doesn't exist, I'm saying like the hypothetical person, may not know about that tradition of tefillas.
But Aliza Levy wrote a book, including the Tefillahs. There's books that, you know, you can go into any Judaica store and find, I don't know, any, but, you know, find the Tefillahs of, they've been published more recently. Again, many of them are much more connected to childbirth and fertility and so on, but the tradition of it is around. So we wanted to make sure that we were not too much at risk, whatever that might be, of the accusation that what we were doing was to radicalize something. Because, first and foremost, because it's not what we were doing. I think if we were doing that, we would have owned it. But we weren't doing it, so don't accuse us of that. As far as I know, and I'm not in anybody's home, and I'm not checking up on anybody, as far as I know, every single person in this book is, I think, Shomer Shabbat, except for one. And I do know that everyone in this book, including that one, prays. And so I think it's fair to say that everybody who's contributed here is a person of faith, sharing her faith. And I think that's a legitimate enterprise. But we were concerned about it, because we weren't trying to radicalize anything. We weren't trying to be, you know, what do they call from the Knesset, reform? Like, it wasn't that. And like I said, if we were taking that stand, I think we would be proud of it. But we weren't trying to. We were trying to express faith as we feel it, as we experience it, through the pain and the anguish and the hope. What else came up? At the very beginning, we had a question about Hebrew and English, because English speakers will use a book with Hebrew and English, but Hebrew speakers might not. And so we had a lot of, like, how do we convey to the Hebrew-speaking world that this is not, that this is for them, right, as well. And basically every single thing in this book is translated from the introduction to the foreword to the all of the tefillot. The bios at the end are not.
Contents,
the table of contents. My son, Gabriel, the table of contents is side by side. And we have artworks that are visual, they're for everybody, right? And some of those people who painted are Hebrew speakers, and some of those people who painted are English speakers, but their language of, I don't know, two-dimensional imagery is the same, as far as that goes. I mean, it's all different, but the same.
Did you find that you had to cut something out that somebody wanted to contribute and you said it's not appropriate?
No, we worked with such people to make sure that they could be kind of become appropriate. We didn't reject anybody's tefillah except for time. Like, there's one or two people where we're like, they've disappeared, they're not responding to us, we can't do any more. We've reached out, we've said the deadline is now, you know, because, but we needed the final version from them. We also gave translations back to all the original authors to make sure that everything was approved. We were not trying to edit. I mean, we proofread, but we were not trying to edit people beyond their own. We helped them, I think, work to get the best version of their tefillah. I don't recall exactly, but I don't think we rejected anybody on the basis of, like, that's not appropriate for this, or that's not good enough. I've discovered, and I discovered along the process, that the things that nothing's going to speak to everybody. The things that speak to one person might be the exact same things that don't speak to the other person, and vice versa. I found, and I think Shira found it, I think Rachel found it, that over time, we found that the things that we thought didn't speak to us, lo and behold, under the right conditions of experience of the tefillah, now could speak to you. So on a given day, it might not be the right thing for me to read, but, you know, under a different hat, or on a different day and in a different mood, I might also find it moving. There are too many tefillot, I think, besides for the circumstantial reasons that they don't apply to everybody, for every voice to apply to everybody, right? Some people glow with their emunah, with their faith. And some people write tefillot like Yael Shachar's that's no less true to faith, but not glowing in her assessment of what needs to be said to God. And I think that that's part of the richness here, at least, you know, for me personally. Shira will say, you know, she needed the book, so we had to do this. Anybody else?
Anne, thank you. It's great. And I invite all of you to buy her the books.
They're here. We have more in the car, but we thought it was enough to pile on.
And help more, have more food and drink.
Thank you very much.
Oh, thank you. So, did you?
Oh, and how did they family?
Well, I don't know when you were there.
So,